got too many things up here again today. Pam was super excited that this was her children's moment week, because everybody loves this story, right? All week long, I can barely get her to be quiet about it in the office. She comes in with exuberance every day. I'm so excited. I can't wait to talk about Lazarus and the rich man, who is traditionally, by the way, called, well, it's the Latin translation of the word rich man, which is not really pronounced Dives, it's spelled Dives, and so, because I don't speak Latin or care to learn, his name is Dives. Because he dived right on down to Hades. And that is also like a Johnny Cash song. We've been studying the Gospel of Luke throughout this Lenten season. And it's been a wonderful journey as we watch as Jesus marches towards Jerusalem. We begin on Ash Wednesday with being fit for the kingdom and heading with a particular purpose towards one's seeming defeat at the hands of the world. And we talk about focus, about the dual points of the Good Samaritan and Mary and Martha, and how really we are being called to do our dance, to focus on what we are being called to do within the kingdom, to be ready. And we talk about bearing fruit. We talk about being found. And now we come here with this word fixed, this gap that is fixed between us and you, as Abraham says. I want to start by reading you a quote, because I too struggle with this passage. I struggle with this idea that anything is irreparable. I don't like the idea that sometimes it's just too late. I don't like it. I just don't. But that doesn't mean I don't have to deal with it. That's the problem here. And so I will read you what I have been convicted by this week, which is this. Christian education is not the communication of correct views about what the various works and words of Jesus might mean. Rather, it is the stocking of the imagination with icons of those works and words themselves. It's most successfully accomplished, therefore, not by catechisms that purport to produce understanding, but by stories that hang the icons, understood or not, on the walls of the mind. We do not include the parable of the prodigal son, for example, because we understand it, nor do we omit the parable of the unjust steward because we can't make head or tail of it. Rather, we commit both to the Christian memory, because that's the way Jesus seems to want the inside of his believers' heads decorated. Indeed, the only really mischievous thing anyone can do with the gospel is insist on hanging only the pictures he or she happens to like. That's what heresy really is, picking and choosing on the basis of my interpretations between the icons provided to me. Orthodoxy, if it's understood correctly, is simply the constant displaying of the entire collection. I don't like it. I want a penknife for my Bible. I want, if we're going to talk about how great Thomas Jefferson was, let's take that part, where I can just pick the parts I want and leave the rest out. I don't want it because I know really good people who do really dumb things, convinced of their own goodness in the moment. That's the problem, right? Very rarely, very, very rarely, does anyone act out of anything other than believing that you are doing the right thing in the moment. There is no true archetype of this evil genius who knows they're doing wrong and does it anyway. Everyone is the hero of their own story. Even the bad guys. So y'all know what the funniest fruit is, right? Take a guess. What's the world's... You might think tomato, because it splats easily. And it's often miscategorized as a vegetable, which miscategorization is a point of humor, right? One of these things is not like the other. One of these things does not belong. You might think the avocado, because I think it's a fruit and I'm not sure. You'd be wrong unless you said bananas, right? Everybody knows bananas are God's funniest fruit. Not ugly fruit or star fruit, or bananas. Because what do bananas do? They are the source of pratfalls. Should I throw one on the ground and you walk by, you have almost a magnetic obligation to step on it and slip. Despite any width of path around it, your job is to fall down if there is a banana on the floor in the room somewhere. It also is the shape of a telephone, which make it great for picking up phone calls from people you don't want to talk to, or people you wish you could talk to but can't. It's also funny because it's always this gag where you stick it in your ear and you can't hear, right? You know, if your kids are telling you something super interesting, my kids only tell interesting stories. Thank you, children. But let's pretend like they didn't, and you don't want to listen to somebody who has something to say that might be either A, boring, B, asinine, or C, upset your worldview. Two bananas, your problems are fixed. Right here. I can't hear you. I've got a banana in my ear. Right? It's still funny. It doesn't matter how old you are. People with fruit in their head is funny. The arrow through the head gag also is always funny. Just like Steve Martin. Always funny. The problem is most of us don't carry around bananas, and yet we find ourselves equally capable of not listening to things we don't want to hear. Well, there's a part of this story I don't want to hear, and there's a part of this story that other people don't want to hear. It's a story about Dives, who is doing the best he can in a world that has told him that his goodness and his virtue and everything he has, his opulence, supports the idea that he is chosen and loved by God. The words used here are very interesting. It talks about this feast, and Jesus will use a feast metaphor. In fact, last week we talked about lostness. Every single story in Luke 15 ends with a party. But Dives is a guy who parties every day. Notice I did not say party all the time. He parties every day. He knows no moderation. There is no amount of feeding his gluttony that is enough. It's almost like he has fully embraced consumer culture and cannot be satiated. Well, Dives, despite being wealthy and healthy and just a beautiful man in purple. Yeah, that's right. It was on purpose today. Despite all of the good things he has, guess what? He dies like the rest of us. Well, before he died, there was this Lazarus, which is the Greek translation of the word Eliezer, which means my God saves. My God helps. My God will take care of me. There is a great bit of irony in this story that the one who is named My God Helps sits outside the gate of the one who is spoiled by the riches of this time, broken physically because he is dumped there by his friends, poor, hungry, and secondarily unclean because the dogs come and lick him. And as much as that sounds like a sweet story, if you've been around dogs, you know they lick everything. They are associated with uncleanness in this culture. He is the worst of the worst. He's a real loser. And guess what? He dies exactly the same. And then the table is flipped. The next scene in this parable is in the afterlife. And here is Dives, and he looks off in the distance, And Lazarus is sitting in the lap of Abraham, gathered to the father of the people of Israel. And Dives, who has ignored Lazarus for years, finally takes notice. But notice he doesn't ask for forgiveness. He doesn't ask or offer an apology. What he says is, "Hey, you look familiar. Could you bring me some water?" Like he is the afterlife's waitstaff. Just a bit. No ice. 2 lemons. Please pick the seeds out of the lemons before you bring them. He's still treating him like a second-class citizen, despite the fact that he can clearly see a new reality is dawning. Lazarus doesn't have a chance to agree, disagree, forgive, act, because now it's Abraham's turn to talk. And Abraham says, "You know, honestly, buddy, even if he wanted to, which seems unlikely, there is this chasm fixed between you and us." The language becomes plural at that point. It is the singular Dives versus the community of two, of Abraham and Lazarus. And one of the things we can say about that is that Hades, as Luke uses the term, Sheol in the Hebrew, or hell, as it is often discussed, is a place where isolationism reigns, where the individual has no sense of community, where he, Dives, who looked after himself and himself alone for so long, finally gets what he always wanted: true aloneness. And Abraham says, it's you and it's us. Well, Dives doesn't get to be who he is by being a dummy, so he decides maybe he'll do a mitzvah, maybe he'll do this great deed, he'll do this good act. So, okay, well, how about you send him, Abraham, to warn my brothers? Because, you know, they're like me. Insulated by our wealth, unconvinced of our need to help those who are suffering. Because if somebody came back from the dead, maybe I could go. Maybe even that would work. Maybe, you know, ghosts are really good at getting people's attention. There's no concept of ghosts in this culture at this time, by the way. But Abraham says, "You know, I'm going to tell you what, buddy. No. Because you've all had Moses and the prophets for all these years, and they have been screaming the same thing. That what I care about is that you take care of the poor of the land. That what I care about is that you alleviate the suffering of those who hurt. That what I care about is blessing you so that you can be a blessing to others, not so that it ends with you. That has been the message since we formed this people in the sweatshops of Egypt. That we would be set free to set free. And it's been going forever, but you've been running around with imaginary bananas in your ears. I don't want to hear that. And if you didn't want to hear it then even if someone came back from the dead, it wouldn't be enough." It's kind of why Jesus says things all the time like, "Let those who have ears hear." Because what we find is that those who don't want to hear won't hear. And those who are open will. I don't like the idea, even though I don't like Dives a lot, there is just this part of me that doesn't like the idea that sometimes it's too late. I've watched broken relationships in the real world be healed. I've watched things work out. I've watched suffering be alleviated. And I don't like the idea that sometimes it's just too late. But I don't get a choice about whether that hangs on my mind's wall. What I do get a choice about is what I do today. What I do get a choice about is, instead of worrying about this gap that is fixed when the next time comes, fixing the gaps that exist now. Whatever power I have, whatever resources I have, might I be one who brings peace and healing and hope and understands that the status quo doesn't always have to be that way. That God has called us to bind up or fix the broken, just as we are being fixed. Amen.